Good morning, guys. How are you?
Morning, Claire. I'm very well, thank you.
Morning, Claire. I'm all good, thank you.
Looking very fresh. I think Boats was the first one on this morning.
He's always on, isn't he? He's always on, badgering Paddy, producer Paddy, for the link. Poor producer Paddy, he's a little bit worse for wear this morning. Has anyone else other than producer Paddy been out and enjoyed a pub garden yet?
No, Boats, I don't want to risk it. I don't want to risk it with all the new strands.
I would love to believe that was true, Boats.
I think you should wear a mask for all future recordings of the pod just to be double safe, Boats. And Claire, you're probably not. Well, have you? I mean, you're on borrowed time with Pub Gardens because, as you've just revealed, you are very close to your due date. So
I'm very close. It could happen. I'm cooked.
Beware,
I'm
Boats.
Not
keep
cooked.
An eye.
The baby's cooked. The baby's cooked any minute, so
Boats, you ever delivered a baby over Zoom?
Nah, I haven't.
Well, today might be your first chance, mate. So you walk her through the breathing, I'll call the ambulance.
We'll keep it quick.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Boats, you've got a few opportunities. You've been asked to appear on some other podcasts.
Yeah, I have done, to be fair, but yeah, I think I'm in one in, it's booked in for June. So, looking forward to that.
You sound thrilled.
It's his face as he says that. You can't see Boats' face on the pod. It's a shame our best asset is so reluctant. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yep. Good.
Yeah, should be good. Should be good.
You'll be fine.
It will
mate.
Be
You'll
good.
Be
You'll be great.
Yeah, it will be good. Yeah, it will be good.
It will be good. So, tune in for more of Boats. Who have we got this week then?
I've got Drew.
For once, we have no personal connection to our guest. It's quite exciting.
It's quite funny. It's funny the way we got in contact with him. Well, he shouted me, he DM'd me. I'm just saying that he heard it. He heard the pod, the first series, and really enjoyed it. And then was telling me his story. And I was just like, oh, okay, that's very interesting. So I told Rob. And then Rob got in contact with him. I let Rob do the rest of the dirty work.
You've got a real insight there into how the background of this podcast works. Boats texts me and gets me to do all the stuff he doesn't want to do.
Well, why doesn't he tell us how he got in contact with the pod?
So what happened, my friend just sent me a newspaper article. I think it was Sun. I'm not too sure, actually. And I saw Boats on there and it was like, oh, PT went to prison, changed his life around, James Sancho. And I was like, nah, that's mad.
An inspiration story to us all.
he's my inspiration.
I don't know what it was. I must have been in a positive mood because I don't usually reach out to people like that. I must have messaged the person that wrote the article. I didn't even have Twitter, so I set up a Twitter account, just some basic one. I messaged her on the off chance that she'll reply, and she sent me through Boats' details, and then we had a call, just had a little chat. And yeah, that was pretty much it, really. And then he put me in, involved with Rob, and now here we are.
A Boats mega fan.
So basically, the reporter leaked my info, basically.
Yeah. We should get onto that.
GDPR issues going on here.
She just leaked my details.
Sounds a bit stalkerish, really, doesn't it? But I just thought,
we've got to ask Drew, have you gone back and listened to season one?
You know what? I've listened to bits. My attention span's not great.
Should have checked that before we got you on.
we'll redo that bit. Just say yes, Drew. Just say yeah. Loved it every minute of it.
Just go on and rate it 5 stars now.
Oh yeah, nice.
Okay, yeah. Right, a great comment. No, that's really interesting. And I think you said when we had a chat before that one of the reasons you reached out is you felt that you had a story that was interesting for us to hear and that you wanted to share. So what is it about your story that you wanted to kind of get out there and get your version out?
I feel with myself, I feel like because of the neighbourhood that I lived in and the crime that I'd done, it was a big thing. So it was just highlighted quite a lot around the area and it was in the local newspaper and the reporters kind of twisted it in a way that made me out to be like I was involved in some sort of gang when it clearly isn't like that. Like people that know me, and you probably see me now, you're like, oh, you wouldn't go to prison, but you'd be surprised. And I feel
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah, look at Rob.
So maybe just that was a very intriguing intro there, Drew.
Yeah.
So maybe tell us a bit, where do you come from and what was the offence that you were accused of and convicted of?
So I'm from Horsham now. I moved out, but from like Surrey way, so Dorking. And I was convicted of aggravated burglary. So yeah.
Under what circumstances?
Yeah, of course. So basically, it all started off with I was at work. I was working in like a tire garage, and anyway, I ended up getting into an argument with one of the boss over something ridiculous. So I just kind of walked out of it. I was like, I'm done with this, and I set up an Instagram page selling like NOS balloons just around the area because that was just the thing to do to make quick cash, and it was like legal at the time.
It's the obvious next step from a tyre garage. it's a natural segue.
I don't know what I was doing. I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll do that. For the meantime, because I was like, what was that? Just 18, so just finished college. And then this guy that I kind of know, I won't mention his name, but yeah, he reached out to me. I knew of him, but I didn't know him like that. He reached out to me and said, oh, I can get you like NOS in like a quite big bulk for cheap. And I was like, oh, that's great. Like I'm broke because I've just lost my job. So I was like, all right, I'll do that. So I went to meet up with him. And then I got to the location and he was like, oh, I don't have it on me. My mate has it. I need to go round to his house. I was like, okay, cool, like, I'll drive you there. So I drove him, because he couldn't drive at that point, drove to the house where I kind of live near. And I gave him, like, what, £250 cash, maybe £300 cash for it. And I'm just sitting in the car, just waiting, and a half hour goes by, and then I get a call from him, and it's like, oh, Drew, something's happened. Come into the house. And the front door's open. So I went in, and I was like, oh, what's happening? And just this older Irish guy was just like, oh, the guy you come with owes me money. You're not getting it until he pays. So I'm going to hold on to this. And I said, look, like, I don't even really know him like that. You've pretty much just robbed me. Like, just give me my money and I'll go. In the end, he just wasn't doing it. So me and him ended up arguing. And we got in a fight together. But that wasn't the bit that I got in trouble for. So what happened, I just said, oh, I was just... because I was quite skinny back then as well, so I didn't really have anyone to. He was just an older guy, do you know what I mean? So I was just, oh, you know what, I'll ring up a few of my mates and get my money back. I'll scare him. So what happens? I rung up one of my mates, and then about four of them came, and two of them had like wooden kind of planks on them. And I knocked on a door and his friend answered it and we just came barging in. And one of my friends hit him on the leg. But the guy that who took the money off me ran off and locked himself in a room and rung up the police. And I was like, oh,
is it?
We need to get out of here. Like, this is just too much. So I was like, I'm not getting in trouble by the police. Anyway, next day... because my car was there originally when I first got there, the second time it wasn't, I got arrested for attempted robbery and aggravated burglary. And then, I went into the cells and it was just all a bit.
Did you get your money back?
No, that's the problem. I didn't even get my money
serious?
Back. Yeah.
It was only attempted boats.
Fucking hell.
That was it. And I got bad. I went in and they were asking for a solicitor. If I wanted one, I was like, yeah. So I just got one of the, I can't remember what they called them.
Duty.
Yeah, duty ones. And he was like, oh, it's fine. There's so many cracks in the case. Just go, no comment. Like, you'll get away with it. It's ridiculous. It was your money. So I went, no comment. And then it ended up going cool and they couldn't deal with it. There was too many complications with it. And I got passed about quite a lot. And then in the end, I got sentenced to, I went to the final judge. I got sentenced to 10 years originally.
10 years?
Yeah. After the my lawyers were, and my solicitors were saying that, like, you probably won't really go to prison for it. Like, you'll get very minimal.
Well, is that on a guilty plea or did you go to trial?
Oh yeah, that was on a guilty plea. So
is that reduced to 10 years or was that your original sentence was 10?
So my original was 10 and then it got reduced because I pleaded guilty to 6.5. And then they took the tag time off because I was on tag as well. I asked to go on tag could do.
What happened to your mates? What happened to the three, four mates that came around? Were they all charged?
No one got charged.
Did they mash up his leg bad or something?
No, it was one hit, a little bruise.
Just one hit?
Yeah. One,
wow. And the guy that did that didn't get charged?
No, because my car was there the first time. No one.
So they said that was you, basically?
Well, yeah, they were just like, it's you. They were saying that premeditated. It was at my victim's home, weapon presence, psychological effects, violence, all of this. And I was like,
So I got a question. So the Irish guy, you said the one that actually like kept your money.
Mm.
Was he like, try and explain him to us in terms of, I'm thinking when you're like, when you say like older Irish bloke, this is going to age me, but I'm thinking like Father Ted. Like, do you mean like, is he like a nice, sweet, middle aged Irish bloke, or is he like someone that kind of knows what's going on?
He just looked like a bit of a crackhead, if I'm honest.
Okay.
And he called the police as
well. He called the police. They were scared. And then, that's the whole weird situation about it, because I wouldn't have gone about it that way. If he just gave me my cash back, I'd just be like, okay, cool, whatever. I understand that situation. But he robbed me and I was broke at that time. Like 250 quid, 300 quid was a lot of money to me. It was just, the whole situation was mad, because it was second time we come back. That was attempted robbery and aggravated burglary. And when I went in, they had a statement, because I went no comment, they had a statement and he said that I went there to steal dogs or something out of there because they were on like a kennel place, I don't know. But they lost the first statement because he withdrew it, but they lost that first one. The police lost the statement.
So when you got arrested, like pretty much, what was he say, a week afterwards?
Next day. Yeah.
So... what's going through? You're 18. Had you been in trouble with the police before at that point?
Yeah, I've been in trouble a couple of times, but not in the sense of going court or anything like that. I've kind of been let off for NFA.
Misdemeanor type stuff, like minor stuff.
Yeah.
What's going through your head at that point, 18 in the cells, being charged or being arrested?
I was shocked because I wasn't expecting the police to come. I was quite naive about it. I didn't realise what I had done. And I think, when he came in and said attempted robbery and aggravated burglary, I didn't even think of that offence. I was like, what have I done? I was just going over in my head, like, what? But it was that offence that I'd done the day before. And I was like,
so you weren't arrested. The police didn't turn up to the scene. They came the following day.
Yeah. So what happened? I was out with my mate and basically we were parked outside my house. Now I went into the house and I get a knock and I'm like, oh, what's he doing? Like, getting all annoyed. My dog's going mad. Open up the door and there's two police officers like on these just come in and put cuffs on me. And then my mum was upstairs and she come down and was like, what's going on? And she was all emotional. So was I. I wasn't hiding back. I was just so, I was shocked. I think that's what it was.
So how did the local, you said the local media kind of took it and portrayed it. How did that come across?
So when I went for my final court date, bear in mind, I've been in front of about three judges already, and this was the final one. And there must have been a reporter in the courtroom that was writing it up. But because the judge that I had was such a racist, like you can just tell by it, because the area I was in, if I was somewhere around Croydon, they wouldn't even have batted an eyelid about it. It's because it was in Guildford Crown Court. And as soon as I saw him, my face just dropped. Oh, fuck, I'm in trouble, like that sort of thing. When I got sentenced, the usher, the make sure everything run smoothly. She ran out of the court crying. The woman right there, yeah. Everyone was really? Crying. Even the guards that took me in, they were like, oh, I'm so sorry about that. Like, it was just, it was a mad situation because there were so many, and I'd done so much for charity as well after that. And I had good references. My probation even said I shouldn't go to prison. Like, there's no point. And he just slapped me, boom, and I was shocked. My leg.
What goes through your head? But we did you like completely spin out? Were you like? Cause, I mean, because imagine it. You know, because I remember from my sentencing, I kind of got around what I was, and it's still you're a bit like this is mad because it's actually happened. If I'd gone in there and he'd given me 10 years, I don't know what I'd do. Do you know what I mean? So, were you? How did you find that you reacted that first like initial bit?
I was shocked how I didn't actually clock what he was saying. Until I saw my auntie and all my family crying, my mum, my friends, and I was just like, whoa. And I started crying as well. I'm going to be honest. I was just, because I wasn't expecting to go, and it just kind of hit me reality. I was like, I'm not getting out till I'm 30, because obviously I couldn't take anything in. And I was just like, oh my gosh, what have I done? My life's over. I've got so much going for me. Like, well, that's what I felt. And then, it's just been taken away by this idiot. And then I went to, into the holding cell. My solicitor came in and said, oh, look, like, that is just mental. We're going to appeal it straight away. I'm going to do that free of charge because I'm so shocked at what's happened. So he'd done that all free, which was nice of him.
And you said that there was a reporter in the sentencing.
Oh, yeah, the reporter in the sentencing. So I don't know. I think this is what my friends and family told me after. Like, after I got sentenced, they asked to interview my mum and that just after
is
sentence.
It?
And they were quite rude to him, probably. It's just like, told him. Because it's just like, and then they went and wrote up an article and just said really personal stuff about my life because there's some things that come out in court that, like, I tried killing myself. And that all came out into the media, and all everyone on Facebook, like around my area, was just sharing it. And I was just prison, like, oh man, like, this is just not me. Like, how am I going to come back from this?
The last thing that you need on top of the sentence.
Yeah, exactly. All that kind of just judgment. I think that's the thing that I still struggle with now, to be fair, because I'm like, oh, everyone knows. But in reality, it's just a minor for them now. It was just.
But people.
I think you probably, you had that probably the most boats. I mean, yours was, quite a high profile case in terms of, did you find you struggled with that as well? And it might be interesting to kind of compare.
Oh, with the first case? About,
yeah, with your kind of mum and family being hounded and stuff. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, you know what, you just have to, for me, I just had to, like, to get the mentality of just fuck what people think, because people don't actually know the truth. So at the end of the day, they can just think whatever they want, but what they actually think doesn't actually matter.
Yeah, so true. That's a good mindset to have as well. 100%.
Because there's no point stressing. Especially being in jail, stressing yourself out about what people are thinking about you. So I just thought, fuck them. Let me just try and do my own thing and keep my own headspace in my own way.
And Drew, did you find when you went into custody that people had seen that media footage themselves, or was it just people from the outside?
It was. I think in Aylesbury, when I went to the young offenders, or there was lots more people on their phones and stuff. So I guess they all kind of search you up, see what's happening, see what you're really in there for. Because when I told people the story, and I had to tell people the story about 100 times, going over and over again, they're like, what are you doing? And they were like, because they didn't believe me. They were like, no way. So I think, they had to look it up.
So let's rewind quickly. So we go through that. So I think I want to hear about your kind of first bit. But I always think the bit that's kind of really, really interesting is that your sentence. So for you, that's a real head fuck because you've got about 8 years more than you thought you would on your sentence, at least. So you got that processing. So then you were downstairs. Where did you go to first? Where did they ship you to first?
They were originally going to say I was going to go Wandsworth. And then they said, actually, no, there's space in Highdown because that's my local. And then I must have got in there quite late because the processing is just such a long process. It was so boring. I was like, I just want to go to bed now, in there. Just to get it out of the tunnel. So yeah, I went in there and I was stuck in a cell with this Chilean guy that didn't speak a word of English. And this is the first time I went in there. He was like, he had like an apple in a bag and like just a line, and he was throwing it out the window. And I was like, what is going on? Regardless, stop that. Like, and I could only watch You've Been Framed because he didn't speak English. So I was just so cool.
Great start. We're off to a flyer at high down.
I was like, can we change it? He's like, no, me not speak English. I was like,
it's like strictly slapstick for the first like 48 hours. It's got to be very visual comedy with that.
I didn't know what the rules were, so I was like, okay. Like, I was quite chill about it anyway. I didn't really care.
Were you top bunk or bottom bunk?
I was top. And then what happened the next day? Because I wasn't used to the small beds, so I was kind of like, I move about a lot in my sleep as well. So I moved about, I kept knocking the wall with my knee. So for God's sake. Anyway, in the morning, everyone was out for soj and they actually kept him in there because they just didn't like him. I don't know why. The guards were a bit funny.
Who were your cellmate?
Yeah. They just kept him in there. They were like, you asked. Well, like,
probably seen him chucking apples out the window all fucking night. Yeah. Might have something to do with it.
The next door come round and opened up the flap. Why are you banging on my wall last night? And I was like, what? I probably been knocking the wall. And I was like, oh, this is not the start of one. But it was all right after that, really. I was just making a few errors with stuff. Like, what was I doing? I was just doing stupid stuff, like wearing my sliders to go and get food and that. And they were just like, you can't do that. I was like, what do you mean, like?
Yeah, that never made sense.
Yeah, I didn't get that. Oh, I think it's because he'd be lying in the showers and that, and it's on hygiene. I was just stuck with that guy walking around the exercise yard.
Did you try and kind of like make conversation with him at all, or was
it with him?
Absolutely not. With your cellmate, your Chilean lad.
It was more like, what's the game called? Where you guess it?
Charades.
Yeah, it was more like that. And it was a nightmare. It was just so painful. And I remember maybe about a week had passed and I knew my friend was in another wing, but I didn't know how to get a message across because I was still quite new. You know, I was just out on the exercise. And I, yo, drunk! No, it was just from across. And I was like, he's shouting my name. And I just realised it was my mate. And he said, oh, like, I'm going to get you over here. And then the next day I was in that house block, which was sweet. And I was out of that cell so happy because it was just dirty. You had nothing. Oh, it was horrible.
But it was short-lived because you were 18, so they sent you to a YOI and you had the misfortune of Aylesbury prison, a prison I know extremely well through work, better than I would like to.
Yeah, well, basically, because I was in the cell with my friend, like from the outside that I knew, then he was talking about his friend that actually got shipped out to Aylesbury, and was just saying, oh, like, it's kind of rough, or, anyway, I was quite settled down in Highdown, and then all of a sudden, I get woken up at like 8 in the morning, like, you're off to Aylesbury, and my mate's face just dropped, and I was like, what? Like, what's wrong with that? And he was like, ah, oh, mate, it's not good, and everyone was coming up to me, trying to give me advice and stuff, like, even the older lot, I was like, wait a sec, how bad is this place? It was only
misleading though. Again, it's another one of those ones that sounds like a nice school trip, doesn't it? Oh, we're off to Aylesbury today.
Like,
yeah. I've got a very sweet little like mini gate that you have to kind of crouch through to get. Gosh. It looks very nice from outside.
That is mad. You're literally like kind of crawl under. I know.
Like a doll's house. It's like a doll's house entrance.
I didn't notice it. Because when you first go in, you get taken in the van and stuff. But it was when I was released, I realised how small it was. I scared an old granny because it just opened and she was walking by. And I was caught by surprise. That's how I feel.
Because it's just on the main road. It's just plonked on the main road.
And there's loads of cars watching you. I'm there with my bags.
Yeah. I want to go and see it now. I'm intrigued. We're going to be responsible for like a tourism boom in Aylesbury of people coming to see this little door in the prison in Aylesbury.
Imagine the scenes.
There's not much happening around there. Hobbycraft.
Well, Drew, you can do some guided tours, mate. You know, the publicity will get off this, what? Get a bit of a name for yourself, little business idea. You're welcome.
But yeah, Victorian building, beautiful.
So tell us, was it as bad as you heard on the rumour mill at Hidown?
You know what? I was okay in there. And I made mates with actually people that I'm friends with now. But the only problem is with it is because they're so young, they're young-minded. So in Hidown, people are a lot older than me. Like I was one of the youngest, and there I was actually one of the oldest. And they're just coming from even a younger prison to there, and they're just immature in the way they think. They're just quite violent and just like, I think they're just bored and they just cause dramas. Yeah. And there's lots of kind of gang members there, and there's always... It's just fights like every day, so it's just like, oh, it's just a bit long. You just want to kind of.
Did you get in any troubles?
Yeah, I was actually saying I didn't really get into trouble. It was more kind of got in a couple arguments, but that's about it, really. I didn't really end up getting in a fight or anything. I was just quite cool with everyone.
You were saying there's a lot more mobile phones that you noticed.
Oh, yes, so much. I was probably like the only one without one. I was like trying to, because you don't have phones in yourselves, like normal telephones. So, yeah, so many people have it and just like doing Snapchats, like just going around going mad. It was just ridiculous. I was like, what's going on? But
Rob has Snapchat.
I think, you know what? I think. It sounds mad. In Hidown, the guards weren't too bad. You get the odd one. Aylesbury, the guards were just as bad as the inmates. They were bad.
In what sense?
Yeah. Well, I didn't notice it. I was like, oh, okay, they're cool, like, whatever. They're just doing their job. But I was in my cell once, and there was a fight. And I was looking up through that small window bit. And they were carrying this guy, and they had him bent up, and they were just slapping him. And I was like, what are they doing? Anyway, I see them, and they're going up the stairs, and then they go, and the cell was right in front of mine. And the door was open, and they're stamping on his head, jumping up, kicking him. And then there's a massive queue of guards out there, and all high-fiving each other and laughing. And I was just like, oh, my gosh. And they all brag about it in front of you. They're like, yeah, bent up this guy, beat up that guy. And I'm like, why are you doing this job? You're meant to try and help people.
Lads, it's a young offenders institute. They're like 17 and 18 years old. Yeah, fucking hell.
Get a life. And they literally, there's guards that absolutely love their job. And I used to just cry because when there was like, when the alarm went off, say on another wing, this one woman, she was quite overweight and she jumped off the staircase and she missed her foot and just kind of fell on the floor, and it was just so, everyone was cringing, but she wasn't a great guard anyway. It was just, they just sprint, they just act all mad, they're so on it, but they love it. You can see in their faces, they get excited.
Do you reckon that, Claire, do you reckon that is with that, you might know this, having seen a lot of that, what do you reckon, Corey, do you reckon it's like just an atmosphere in a prison, does that come like top down from like, you know, like if the governor's a bit of a prick, does that generally filter through to the whole prison, or is it like...
Is it because YO's... comment on the governor of Aylesbury. No, I think that there's a combination. Definitely the environment of the younger lads, and you know, you do notice things that they are, you know, they're less mature just because they haven't grown up yet physically, emotionally, developmentally. And there's a lot of testosterone going around, and it's not a good place to be. They're not fed enough, so they're hungry.
Yeah.
And they're locked up for 23 and a half hours a day when they need to be doing a lot of exercise. So they get let out, and then they've got a lot of energy to get out. And I think you can combine that with quite a young staff set. You know, when we were talking to... the prison governor that we spoke to beforehand, he was talking about there being quite a lot of the older officers there that, you know, had a lot of experience and were used to dealing with things. And I think at a prison like Aylesbury, the turnaround of staff is huge, and there's a lot of young people. I don't know if Drew, if you found there that was, a lot of young officers.
There was 21 in there, and there was 18-year-olds telling us to bang up, and we were like, "Shut up, you're a kid!" Like, do you know what I mean? How can you let someone younger than you be in charge, like at a young age, 18 years old? Yeah. And I was like,
"It's mad. A very strange dynamic, that's I mad think." Still. And you know, the power shift is all over the place, and yeah, very strange. I think that's some of the problem. And I mean, Aylesbury, just as a prison, is extremely run down. Yeah. It's, you know, it doesn't encourage a lot of respect amongst, I imagine it doesn't encourage a lot of respect amongst the prisoners or the staff when the environment is so miserable. And, I don't know what you felt about that.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I think I can only compare it to Highdown, and just even the way it's decorated, it just changes your whole mindset, and just everything's just really depressing in there. It's not a nice place to be. Like, it's just, it's proper rundown. And I think because it's got that reputation, some people try to live up to that.
Yeah.
And they're trying to act all bad, but really they're scared. Like, you can kind of see through it that they're scared. Because there's some big guy, there's some big guys in there, but I just, with me, I just try to be as humble as possible. I'm not going to be a bitch, but I'm not going to act like I'm hard and just go around starting on people, because that's not my vibe anyway. So I feel like people pick up on that energy, but there's some people that kind of overdo it and then get themselves in trouble.
There's a lot of mix of sentences. You know, you've got some people in there serving big sentences, and some serving much smaller ones. So they've got very different things, priorities, and you know, yeah, it's quite a serious prison, I'd say.
Do they run the adult and the youth? Are you on like the same regime, as in same routine and that kind of? Are they essentially run exactly the same way as adults and YOs, but just obviously you've got different age brackets?
The regime is a lot different, I'd say. A lot different.
Because the reason I ask is, I guess you're kind of thinking like, well, in adult prisons, I guess you're working off the basis that a lot of the people in there have worked and are used to, you know, have built like kind of a routine. And if you're, but you're chucking a load of like 16, 17, 18 year olds in there who have never, like, you know, a lot of them have never worked a day in their life, are used to like school. A lot of them, I imagine, are used to not doing a lot of school. Do you know what I mean? So trying to enforce the same kind of thing, you know, it would make sense on paper to maybe try and implement something that works a bit better for, you know, a younger, kind of less mature kind of age bracket. I'm interested to know.
So there's two different types of YOIs. So Aylesbury actually only starts at aged 18. So it goes 18 to 21. But you've got some YOIs, let's say Feltham, that will take the boys from younger. So you could have the 15, 16, 17-year-olds on one side of Feltham. Drew, you were saying that you found the regime really different. Do you want to, you're the best person to tell us about that, I'm sure.
I just had to adapt to it. It's hard to try. I'm trying to process it, so I may be a bit silent on some bits. I think it's the amount of time you're allowed out. It seemed a lot more relaxed in Highdown. Like, even when the cleaners were out, the guards would just like leave our door open, and I'd just chill with the door open. And you could go into each other's cells and stuff in Highdown. Whereas Aylesbury, you're not allowed in this, like, even when you're on soch, you're not allowed in and out of each other's cells. Everything's got to be locked. It was just such high security all the time. And I think I noticed that more on visits. I'd say every other time I was getting strip searched on visits. At Highdown, I didn't get strip searched once. There, it was just constantly. And it was almost like they're standing there, like, trying to embarrass you. Does that make sense? And they're not professional, man. They're just two big guys, don't they? Like, right, get it off there. It's more like a power trip for them. And I feel like, not all of them, because I'm not saying that at all, but I say there's quite a lot of majority of people that either have had bad experiences in their life, or they've been bullied or something like that, and they feel that they've got power in this situation, but they're using it in a completely wrong way. I remember, actually, there's this one guy. I can't remember his name now. And we weren't allowed out for showers. I didn't have a shower for like 4 days. I had to wash in the sink. It was so bad. And I kept pressing my emergency button. I was just getting angry. I was like, come on, like, you're treating us like animals. And they were like, yeah, but you done the crime and all this. I was like, come on, mate, let's out for a shower. And what he done, he let everyone out on my landing. and just didn't open up myself and just left me in there. And I was just like, sat there, just so angry. I was like, what are you gaining from that? I can't even ring up my family because I'm stuck in there. Like, it just gets bad. That's why there was a riot. That's why.
Yeah, tell us about the riot. Were you involved in it?
No. I was listening to it. It was mad.
Listening.
So
sure. Yeah, that's fine, mate. Yeah, we'll go with that. Party line.
We'll check back the news story.
Yeah, I don't think it was me like carrying a mop attacking the guy.
Yeah, the ringleader.
Yeah. Holding the gang member. Don't get the Dawkins reporters on there, so they'll start twisting it up. But no, I was in my cell and it must have been really early in the morning and you just hear like a massive roar and I was like, oh, what is that? And it was, say, I'm doing this like it's not a podcast, but it's, our wing here is D and then E wing on this side. So we're kind of connected. And pretty much it was just a riot just about protesting about we're not allowed showers for 5 days straight. Like food is rubbish. We're literally riding 24-hour ban, no more than that, and it's just driving us insane. Like some of us are in single cells, we're just there so bored. Like especially if we don't have phones. So a couple of them were like live streaming it on Instagram, like, and they were just
good content. That
just charging the prison guards out of the way, and then in the end they had to get the tornado squad in. But this went on for hours. And then
Was everyone opened up?
Yeah. Basically, I think what happened was they were allowed out for exercise and they refused to bang up. So what they'd done, they covered all the cameras with like...
They
paid some of the geeky guys to do it.
Yeah.
So they did all of that. And yeah, it was just... And then it just kind of went off and they couldn't control it and it went on for hours. And then it hit the newspaper... it hit the news, but we were watching it and everyone was going mad, like banging on their door. They were like, in Aylesbury, this is happening.
Were you scared?
No, at the time, I found it funny. And that's when I kind of realised, I was like, I'm kind of getting dragged into this. I'm enjoying it. But I think it's because I was so bored. And there was kind of a part of me that was like, fair play. Like, are they going to listen to us now? You can't keep doing that. So I was happy it weren't me involved, but my mum was waiting for a visit and then she saw like the ambulances coming in and out and tornado squad. So I think she was scared about that, but I managed to get that out of my cell and make a phone call I got one of the guards to make a phone call to my mum because we were all in complete banner just to let her know I was all right.
Tell our listeners what a tornado squad is and what it looks like.
I don't know. Someone told me about it. I think they're just wearing crazy shields and some mad armor. And it's pretty much, I think they call people from the outside when they got no control of the prison.
Is it right? There's like a tornado squad that like covers a certain region. Is that right?
It's a national,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah,
national. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
And they're like the elite in theory.
Yeah. Like, all the tornadoes. And you could hear them like,
yeah,
it was mad, and they were like, it's just ridiculous. You just wouldn't expect it. It was kind of like something out of the movies, but yeah.
Boats, am I dreaming it? Or when we were probably in high dance. Do you remember there was like, well, I don't know if I'd go as far as say a riot. I'm pretty sure. Do you remember it was when they sacked the whole?
There was a lockdown.
It was a lockdown. One of the best bits of prison logic I can ever remember is that a lads on the server were like, right, we want the chocolate biscuits. And they were like, well, if we just take a few, they'll know. So they were like, we're going to take every single chocolate biscuit out of people's lunches. Yeah. And then they won't know that they're missing. So then they did. And then the screws picked up on it and they sacked the whole server on. I think it was on your house block?
Yeah,
and then they all kicked off, and that was the closest we got. I remember that. But then around, it's weird. You couldn't really. I think you could hear a bit of it at the time, but the whole prison was going absolutely mad. As soon as people picked up that it was like lockdown, or they were like there was a bit of a riot going on, everyone loved it. The windows through the whole prison were going.
That is so fun. Yeah, it's the windows. It's so annoying. Bang, 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 bang.
It's like at school when someone dropped their plate in the canteen, everyone's giving it those ones on the desk. It's a bit like that.
I think that's another thing. You can't sleep in young offenders because they're up all night, shouting out the window, chatting to each other.
Wait, are you listening? Yeah, all of that, innit?
Yeah. I didn't know what they were saying. And it's, hey, well, quick, they're like, are you listening? Are you listening? Like that. And I was like, what are they saying? I had to ask my mate. I was like, what is he doing? And then...
he's making sure you're listening.
Hey, are you listening? It's like, yeah, mate, I've been chatting to you for 5 minutes. I ended up saying it. I was like, I've got a problem. What am I doing?
Yeah, Rob used to say that.
You get me
to say that. Yeah.
Well, that's hilarious. Listen, you get caught up with it. It's mad.
Iron sharpens iron, innit?
So, boats, do you feel that you made a lucky escape? Because you were of YO age when you were in, but you didn't go to a dedicated YOI.
Yeah, I had a touch. I definitely had a touch. I wouldn't have boded well in a YO jail. So I'm glad I was in an adult jail. It would have done me no good being with young boys.
Why?
Because you just get caught up. You get caught up in dramas and stuff. So I think it was better for me to be around grown men.
Fair enough.
Drew, has it put you off going back to prison?
Oh yeah, like even from the first day. Like, don't get me wrong. Actually, I'm not even gonna
try. So what, Drew, did you do? Did you do five?
No, I ended up going for my appeal, and they halved it. And by that point, I already had my tag time. I've done quite a bit already, so they pretty much released me a couple months after.
So how long did you do behind the door? How long did you do in total?
Maybe just over a year.
Okay, big difference then, yeah.
Yeah, massive. Crazy. I was like thinking...
Yeah, because your barrister knew he had to pull his finger out. That's why he fucking made sure
He grafted, and I went to High Court, and they were like, it's manifestly excessive. And I think they were quite shocked.
So basically, in easy terms, they basically said that the judge gave you a ridiculously high sentence.
In their words, whatever words they use, I'm not very good. I'm not academic like that, but yeah, they were just saying all sorts.
Do you remember how you felt? So were you on video link? Were you in court on the appeal?
I was on video link, but when I found out, I was so happy. So relieved. And then I come back to the wing and there's this guy, Boogie, one of my mates, and he's like, you look so happy. What's happened? And everyone was just kind of like shocked because it's not heard of, especially in Aylesbury, to get that. Yeah. But then again, in my head, I was thinking, oh, there's going to be a lot of jealous people about it. So I try keeping it quiet because you can see people like kind of looking over.
They put a lot of jealousy, a lot of suspicious people wondering why you've said that. That's how people's heads work.
True.
It's mad though, because in jail you actually can't act too happy because there's other people that are doing that like proper big birds, so you can't act too happy. You can't. It's hard.
Nah. And in Aylesbury, because the reason I went there is because it's a lifeless jail, so you have to be serving over 6 years. So that's when I went there. Then I was saying to him, I said, look, I don't have 6 years anymore. Ship me out. I'm over 21. I've got under 6 years. I shouldn't be here. And they wouldn't do it. So I was stuck in there. Stuck in there.
So you had like 2 months left. What was that?
Two or three months, maybe.
So did you like breeze that because you had like light at the end of the tunnel? You're suddenly not staring down the barrel another 4 years. Right. Or was it hard because, you know, you're kind of, it drags?
Well, I think I was actually meant to have 6 months, but with my, because I could apply for the, what's it called?
HTC, early release.
Yeah. So I was trying to get onto probation. My family on the outside were trying to get onto them and no one knew anything. So I was there like, oh, I just want to get out of here now because it was dragging. And in my head, I was like, I need to get out now. Like, and then one day randomly, I was getting annoyed with the guard. I was like, come on, like, you're not helping me out. He come back in after it was raining, just soaked, and just threw papers at me and said, you're off Monday. And I was like... I didn't want to believe it though, because when I got told it, there was something in my head that was like, is that wrong? Like, are they lying? Because that's what you get paranoid in there. You just, it was weird. Yeah. I didn't believe
it. It's mad. You don't believe nothing until you see it.
No, you don't. You feel like you're going to be trapped in there forever. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
Did you come out to your mum's or probation hostel or?
Yeah, I came out to my mum's.
Well, that's good.
That was nice. My cousins and my mum picked me up. And then, we were in the car and then we went to McDonald's and we were at Cobham Services and it was just ridiculous. I just couldn't deal with it. There was too many people around. Mad.
Yeah.
It gets like that. It was just too much. I was like, oh, I need to go.
Did the press pick up on your release or had they got bored of the story by then?
No, they picked up on the appeal and they were like, armed gang member or whatever. Judges say 6.5 years is too much for him and just trying to put me out like that. And then I had my phone because I hadn't been on my phone for ages, so it was making me dizzy. But on Facebook, I was looking at, because I got tagged in loads of stuff when I went in, and there was like loads of Karens on there going, "This guy's disgusting."
That's me in there, fucking Karens.
Give me a break. Like, this is the thing. That's the main thing why I wanted to kind of come on here and just explain my story. Where, don't get me wrong, I was in the wrong, but I feel I've never done anything bad before, so I feel like I got really harshly punished on it. For what it was originally.
If you are one of those Karens and you're listening, please drop us a message. We'd like to know your up-to-date thoughts.
They'll be all of them.
Right to reply. Yeah.
You're going to be like, oh, yeah, I can't wait for it.
I love a Karen.
Oh, dear.
Drew, we've got a couple of questions that we've been asking all of our guests to finish up with.
Yeah.
The first question is one thing you can change about the criminal justice system in a dream world.
In a dream world.
Money's no object.
No. Well, I say with the courts, that's a bit where I want to change. Just the fact that they don't stick to what the guidelines are. Does that make sense? Use your common sense. And taking what the situation actually is, that's what a proper judge should do, not go, okay, right, you tick that, but there's loads of cracks in it, so it doesn't make sense. So I think that's it. Does that kind of make sense to you?
Yeah, definitely.
100%.
And then if you had the misfortune of returning back to custody, which I'm sure you won't, who would be your dream cellmate for the year?
Jesus.
Apart from Boats, since you're his biggest fan.
Yeah, Boats. Thing is, I don't know if he snores or not, so that might be a problem. Probably my mate Endurance that I was in the cell with. Well, Mendez, he was funny. Thiago.
Who's that, the Chilean?
Nah.
It started badly, but him and Mendez are firm friends now.
Oh, the Chilean, that would be a nightmare.
So it would be people that you actually shared with already. That's good.
Yeah, so I didn't share with Mendez. I shared with Endurance. But I had to go into a single cell. I like my own space. It's like you get caught up on each other, especially in Aylesbury where you're not really working. There's nothing for you to do there. And you're just stuck in there. And it's just like, oh, it's a bit like, you like your space, you know, I like my privacy. So I need to just go into a single cell. But he was cool with that.
So yourself really is the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. A bit arrogant.
Yeah, probably, but I don't know. I electrocuted myself when I was on my own. That's the problem.
Maybe it's safer that you got someone to look after you. Boats, you're up, mate. We know you like kind of taking these lads under your wing. We'll get you in there.
It was through the kettle. You know when you use it for a light and you use a cotton bud to light up. I had the red and blue wires on the back of the kettle doing that. And I was like, oh, I've just made some porridge oats. I had some porridge. So I put the milk in with the water and just left the wires loose. And I was like, oh, actually, I have another milk. Put that in. And the water started rising, obviously, because I put two milks in. There was too much water.
Because it's a kettle and it will boil.
Physics 101 here.
And I was like, oh, it's going everywhere. It's going over my desk. So I went, I put my hand in it. And obviously, when I was lit, I just electrocuted myself. So I was sat on my bed just like, what is going on? I'm losing my head. Brain cells.
Only got yourself for that one, I think, Drew.
Yeah, I know.
That's been so interesting, though, and I'm so pleased that you reached out via the Sun. Yeah. Or to name drop the Sun.
Yeah. Were you in the Sun boats? I mean, he's boats has done the rounds, as we know, famously. He's out in fact there. The face of the pod. Yeah.
I'm sorry. He's done pretty well to come off to be befriended by the Sun and the Guardian, you know.
But you know what? Looking back, I shouldn't have done any interviews for any of them because the way they was on me before. I actually shouldn't have done no interviews for them.
I think you might be.
That's forgiving. You're a bigger man.
That's the attitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, you've inspired so many.
Exactly. Rob's inspired me
more.
It's true.
Drew, have you ever been told you have more than a passing resemblance to Jordan Belfort? Do you know who I mean? Because I think who's the real Wolf of Wall Street? He was the guy that was the inspiration, talking of inspirations. He was the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
And I think there is a more than a passing resemblance. So I think we've stumbled on why you got 10 years. Because the judge was like, he's fucking at it again. Not again, right, give him 10.
Okay.
So for our listeners, if you want to Google Jordan Belfort,
you'll get it.
I know.
Here we go. I actually did it. There we go, if you can see.
I'm going to get the images out.
That's a young Jordan Belfort.
That looks like you, Rob.
That's Drew with my lid. That's with my lockdown lid.
It's like you, bro.
When you say young, quite a lot younger, right?
Just all right, mate. I need to kid. It's been a tough lockdown. I'm gonna get a bit of work done. Get rid of these crow's feet. I'll be good to go.
By the way, everyone on the pod, Rob's dyed his hair as well.
Fake news. This is fake news.
he's been on the Just for Men.
It's something
jet
bad.
Black.
When season two was coming back, I thought I've got to touch it up a little bit. We've got a bit of profile now.
Yeah. Careful, Rob. Don't play with it too much. The colour might come out. Yeah.
Yeah, actually. I'll do a Rudy Giuliani.
No, Drew, brilliant. Thank you so much. And hopefully maybe you'll at least listen to your own episode of season two.
Everyone
else's.
Boats' episode in season one and now his own in season two. That'll be two episodes. Drew,
and
what
we
a legend.
We want to come back and chat with your mum because we got a tease of it last week. But she can't make it tonight, but maybe we can do a special
episode
with Drew's mum.
I want to hear her take on your story, and I also want to hear what it was like turning on the news to see that there's a riot in your son's prison and then getting a phone call from that. I want to know what that was like.
Oh, dear. Oh, I shouldn't be laughing. Just
Well, Drew, what a legend. Thanks so much for coming on, mate,
Thank you, Drew.
For sharing your story. It was, yes, really, really interesting. Really appreciate it.
Cheers. Take care.
Wow, another fantastic conversation, I thought, there. Really, really likable young lad again. When I first heard his kind of outline of his story, when I heard the full version, it was slightly different to how I expected. But always interesting with these things. I think it's always, interesting to get like the kind of details and how people kind of see their involvement in stuff, which was all really good. But yeah, really, really likable lad and seems to be doing pretty well now that he's out. And I bet he was pretty relieved to have his sentence reduced that much.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. I'm glad he's doing well as well. Like, I'm still keeping contact with him, and he seems like he's got his head screwed on. He's knuckled down.
And
speak to him, Boats? That's nice.
Yeah. He messages me, and I reply.
That's how conversations work. Yeah, fairly standard setup.
But you have to tell him. I hope you've told him that this is his big week.
No, I'm going to tell him. I'm going to message him. To be fair.
Yeah,
we need to get a photo from him, don't we? Because those keenly watching our Instagram will notice that
he's a good looking boy.
Ed's episode did not get a post because we didn't get a photo from him, so we need to get that.
But I think because he responded to me, but he didn't. He wanted to stay elusive, didn't he?
He wanted to keep his anonymity. I've done I've done some background checks on Drew, and his name is Drew on both of his Instagram accounts. So he's either really
Drew.
Rolling, he's really going deep on this alias, or his name is Drew. I think he is Drew.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
You see what I've done there, though? That's a nice little segue through to background checks, which was our question on Instagram this week. See a little nod from Claire there. That's falling into place.
I enjoyed that.
Boats still no idea what's going on. Just shaking his head. So the question on Instagram this week was related back to Ed's episode last week, where he talked about how he
was turned down for a few jobs once his conviction came to light. So we wanted to, we asked on Instagram whether people should have to declare their convictions. We had a really, really good response back, actually. And a couple of the kind of responses across the board, I would say it was people did not think you should have to declare them, but a bit of a mixed bag. Some people kind of saying it should depend on the conviction. Claire, maybe you can shed a bit of light on this one in terms of you. I'm not sure if this might be out of your remit, but in terms of things like DBS checks. So I think the question I was asking was about whether, you know, Ed had to declare his conviction. But do you know how it works in relation to what is revealed from background checks when kind of employers do those DBS checks and things like that?
Yeah. So for most jobs, well, for most things, there's a period of time where they say that your conviction has been spent, which is when it will be after you've actually served your offence and some time plus that. So it changes depending on the nature of the offence and the seriousness of the offence. So there's a kind of chart where you can see at what stage your sentence will be officially spent. Once it's spent, you don't need to disclose your criminal record. It's all in the, I'll give you a bit of law, it's in the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act 1974. So check that out if you're really interested. No, once it's spent, it doesn't get disclosed on what you call like a basic DBS check. But there's still, some jobs still have these standard or enhanced, they call them, DBS checks, you know, which might be working with vulnerable people or with children or... you know, more specialist jobs, and they can see what's been spent still on your record. Okay. So it is important to work out
what's
when
the
that
typical
is.
Do you know, you said that on the different convictions get spent after a different amount of time. Do you know what the range is on that in terms of, like, is it, you know, a year, 3 years?
It really ranges because I think it can be indefinite. My memory is it can be indefinite if you've got a life sentence because you're on license for the rest of your life. So it sort of makes sense that the conviction's never spent because technically you're always at mercy of being recalled. The place to go if you want to find out is there's a really good website called Unlock. And that's basically what they do. They look at disclosure and they've got tools to work out when your conviction's been spent, what you'll have to reveal, when you don't have to disclose, when you do, et cetera, and ways to kind of, some advice to get around it. So Unlock is the charity that I recommend for you, the website.
There we go. That's good. I mean, I think it's a really interesting one because I think on one hand, you can kind of see the logic behind declaring that, you know, it's kind of a safety net for employers. But I think, I think the most interesting answers we had, I think were about, I mean, interesting, not the necessarily, I necessarily agree with it, but I think where people are kind of saying it should be for some convictions and not for others. And I think it becomes a bit difficult with that, doesn't it? Because I think if you're then, that's quite subjective in terms of what you think is relevant. I think there's some obvious ones for, like, you know, working with children and obvious convictions that would need to be declared with that. But I think there's a big movement.
It's not just jobs, though, that it affects. It's your insurance. Mm. Like, you have to disclose things on your insurance.
I got shafted on mine.
You have to disclose lots of things if you're going abroad.
Mm. Yeah. Boats, did you ever have any issues with your... Have you ever had any issues with your, like, post-conviction? Other than, obviously, you were banned from football for life, but...
Yeah, which was quite significant. Because I don't think I've properly applied for a job after jail.
You just work for yourself. Kind of like,
yeah, but I think that was the mindset as well when I went to jail. For, I'm just gonna to save all that hassle. I'm just gonna do it for myself.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's what you said there about insurance, Claire. So my PT insurance is like twice the price. It's just like, I think normally it's like 60, 70 quid. I have to pay like 250 quid for mine because of my conviction, right. Which is, I mean, just by the by. I mean, I think it's interesting though. I think part of one side of the argument, again, not that it's my view, but I think one side of the argument would be that, you know, people would go, look, actions have consequences. If you commit a crime, this is one of the consequences. But I think a much stronger argument, in my view, is the other side, that is that if you view prison would be the punishment if people have been there in particular. And I think it's such a hindrance to people getting back into work and that kind of thing. You know, if you the stats around employment being the kind of biggest factor in terms of people reoffending, I think, isn't
it? Here
he
goes.
Here we go.
Stats.
Stato.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's got to be in proportion, I think, to getting rehabilitation. There's like a campaign by a lot of employers, really sort of pro employers that, I guess, for less contentious jobs, but there's a campaign called Ban the Box, which is when you have to tick the box to say you've got an unspent criminal conviction.
And Richard Branson's quite a well-known advocate of that. And then I think there are increasingly more and more companies, aren't there, that kind of are. Greg's, I know, Timpsons famously employ ex-prisoners. I'm really on my
Redemption
segues
roasted.
Today. You know what's coming next. Folks really enjoyed that one, I can see that. Redemption Roasters. Oh, who don't shake your head, mate. Look, I'm becoming more and more professional each week here. I'm aspiring to be at Claire's level. We're all getting it down to one take, but yeah, so Redemption Roasters, who do a lot of very good work with ex-prisoners.
Tony told me that he's gone back in for order number two.
Look at that.
He loves the coffee so much.
That is behind the scenes Tony, who...
That's behind the scenes Tony.
We've had comments coming through as well. We've had people in our reviews. Remember to rate and review on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcast. But we've had people there commenting that they're enjoying the coffee, which is good. Very, very good stuff. I've just had a cup there.
Well, you've got to give them the code or this spiel is.
Yeah, Banged Up 25. Remember, Banged Up 25, you get 25% off in cafe and online. So very convenient.
Very
Boats
convenient.
Just really not enjoying this.
Boats wants to go back to bed. For the first person who came on, suddenly you've... who have we got next week?
We've got
Eric.
Well, we've got Eric. It's Uncle Eric.
It's Uncle Eric. Errico. Eric's episode, I think, will be very interesting for the audience. We are going to the other side. Eric has been a victim of a serious crime, and he's going to tell you that side of events. Shall we? We won't reveal what the crime was.
No, leave everyone in suspense. But it was a really, really interesting chat. And yeah,
it was, to be fair. It actually was.
I think everyone will definitely enjoy it. And he also revealed Claire's nickname to us, which was good. So we'll cliffhanger that one as well. Tune in next week to find out Claire's
about
nickname.
That. Yeah. I think I ended up disclosing it myself, didn't I?
I think you did actually, yeah.
And have a good week. Enjoy yourselves. Nice to see you.
You guys take care.
Bye.